Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. If you have just joined us, welcome back to the program Family Health Matters. I'm your host, Sister Zeenat, and joining me in the studio today is Sister Gloria Mnisi, a clinical facilitator in the pediatric department at the Charlotte Maseka Hospital. And we're going to be talking about childhood cancer. Now, I know we have done a program earlier, in, I think just before Ramadan, that was one of the programs we did too. But we're going to continue with this because it's really something that can be very devastating if a child is diagnosed with cancer. So, Sister Gloria, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Hi, Sister Zeenat. Thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to talk to the community. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's start off. Maybe, you know, just to give us a brief, a bit of a recap of the last programs we did on childhood cancer. Maybe you can just give us some information there, please.
Okay. The last program we had, we spoke about the childhood cancer warning signs, which are the things that can guide us to be able to suspect cancer. We spoke about presenting symptoms, persistent symptoms. We must present them early to the seeking treatment early for persistent symptoms. But that doesn't really explain what persistent symptoms are. So today we are going to try and talk about these symptoms so that when we say seek help early for persistent symptoms, then people understand what we're actually talking about. So those symptoms are symptoms that relate to leukemia, relate to the worms, tumors, you know, all these cancers that affect children. So in the program, we'll try and unpack those symptoms and relate them to the specific cancers so that it makes more sense.
Okay. Maybe you would just like to perhaps just, because we spoke about some of the warning signs last time, so maybe just pick up on that and then we can continue from there.
Okay. We spoke about seeking help early for persistent symptoms, talking about things like persistent temperature. A child presents with temperature, they get taken to a health practitioner, they get given treatment or antibiotics, and the temperature doesn't really go away. You know, they have an infection, they get given an antibiotic, they finish the course of treatment, but the infection still persists, you know. Or sometimes they present with anemia of unknown origin. You know, the child just becomes anemic and you think they need a blood transfusion, or you put them on iron supplements, but that doesn't help. So, and that thing goes on and on and on. Sometimes they might present with tiredness, loss of appetite, you know, they're complaining of headaches, they become wobbly, they can't maintain their posture, they just not interested in playing because they feel very tired. Some of those symptoms can persist. And, you know, if you're not thinking about cancer, you may not be able to relate them to this particular cancers that we are going to talk about. We also talk about aching bones. You know, children don't really suffer from bones, and they tell you, my bones are aching, or they tell you, I've got backache. And you wonder, why backache? Maybe you think, ah, this child doesn't want to go and play, or this child doesn't want to go to school because there's a lot of work to do at school. Whereas it's a genuine complaint that they are giving us. But because we're not thinking cancer in terms of children, so we can't even associate those symptoms with cancer. Some of the things is, you see a child with a white spot in the eye, presenting to a doctor, to the clinic, or to even a hospital. And because they're not suspecting some of these cancers that present with a white spot in the eye, they just give eye drops or, you know, expect it to go away. And it doesn't go away. So that is another cancer that can present like that. So those symptoms that I've just alluded to are the symptoms that may need to make us worried and maybe think about cancer. But this we will understand as we go on and explain which cancers present like this.
Mm-hmm. I think, you say we don't want to think about cancer. It's just that we really, I think that's the last thing you want to even think of if you take take your child to the doctor. You know, as a parent, I think we just push that out of our heads. We don't even want to think about cancer being a problem. Or you know, that a child possibly may develop cancer or something of that sort, you know. So I think it's also very scary. But unfortunately, we have to do these programs for children, people to be aware that, you know, don't neglect these things and don't push it out of your mind, because, you know, early intervention is very important, I think. So, yeah, let's talk more about that anyway.
Yes,
so
you're quite right that we're scared. And also we're scared because childhood cancer is rare. You know, when something is rare, you don't want to be one of those rare.
Yeah.
Yes, mm-hmm. At the back of your mind, you wouldn't want to be one of those people in those statistics. You know, it's like if something is not a good thing, you stay away from it. So because childhood cancer is rare, that's another thing that makes people not to think cancer. You know, we're just looking at the symptoms and want to manage the symptoms and not wanting to see why we're seeing these symptoms.
Okay, so let's talk more about that. So before we go into that, so what is the incidence of childhood cancer in South Africa, you know, in particular? I mean, this is our country. We want to know what's happening in our country.
Yeah, before I explain about South Africa as such, I would like to say worldwide, about 150 per million children are diagnosed with cancer. But in South Africa, the accurate figures are not known because of those reasons that I said. They are diagnosed late. Some of the children would die before they are even diagnosed. Some would die being diagnosed before the treatment even starts, because the problem has been going on for some time. So we've lost that time of early diagnosis, starting treatment, and getting to good prognostic features. So they say about 500 to 600 children would die of cancer undiagnosed in South Africa. The reason being, most children are very far away from facilities. That's the one thing. The other thing is, we're not suspecting cancer. You know?
The last thing on your mind.
It's the last thing in our minds. So that is another reason. So if you're not thinking about cancer, you won't suspect it when you see these symptoms. Also, a lack of facilities, you know, lack of facilities, especially in the rural areas. Those people in the rural areas have to have someone that is aware of cancer to can be able to refer them to the tertiary hospitals where the cancer is being treated. And our awareness doesn't really cover the whole community. Hence, we are repeating this topic today, because we've noticed that awareness, the coverage is not enough. So those are some of the reasons that we are not diagnosing enough, we are not treating enough, and when we do treat, sometimes we treat them when it's too late, and we end up losing these children. So I think the most important thing is awareness. We need to talk about cancer more, you know, childhood cancer. We need to talk about it more than what we are doing.
I see. So basically, but you say here in South Africa, but what is the reason for them not having enough, you know, don't they take enough statistics? Don't they go out there to find out more about this?
Like I said, you know, like 500 to 600 would die. You'd only know
too late
that this was cancer. So if they were diagnosed early, then our statistics would be accurate to say so many are being diagnosed annually, you know, with cancer. So our statistics, the figures are actually not known. For instance, in the rural areas, when a child dies, was sick and die, not many people would opt for an autopsy, you know, and you just think the child was sick. Yes, it was an illness, and the illness took the child. So, you know, those numbers are not added in our statistics. Hence, I'm saying awareness should be done more often and it should be spread everywhere, so that even in those areas where there are no resources, if people are aware of the presence of cancer in children, then they can make means of getting them to be referred to the treatment centers.
I see. Okay, so we're going to take a short break, and when we return, inshallah, we're going to be talking more about, you know, some of the common cancers in children. Inshallah, we also want to look at, you know, in these common cancers, we want to look at some of the common symptoms associated with them. So, inshallah, when we come back, we will continue. Also, a reminder to our listeners, please, if you do have any questions, Sister Gloria is here, and she would be able to help you, or at least, you know, refer you to the correct people, inshallah. So stay with us. We'll be back in a few moments. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome back to Family Health Matters. I'm your host, Sister Zenit, and my guest is Sister Gloria Mnisi. She's a clinical facilitator at the Charlotte Maseka Hospital, and she is from the pediatric department. We're talking about childhood cancer, and we're now going to be looking at some of the common cancers in children, inshallah. We also want to look at the symptoms and, you know, if you have any questions with regards cancers, or, you know, anything on your mind with regards to this program, then please do feel free to contact us. The number to dial 011-854-1548. You can also SMS or WhatsApp me on number 082-84-92-786, inshallah. Okay, so Sister Gloria, once again, thank you so much for joining us. And let's now go on to all, you know, not all, of course, but some of those common cancers in children.
Okay. I'll go through at least five of the common ones.
Mm-hmm.
Leukemia is one of the common cancers. Okay.
So
mm-hmm. With leukemia, some of the symptoms that we see is infections. You know, the child would present with recurrent infections, like I've alluded earlier on. They would have recurrent infections, they get antibiotics, they get treated, but the infection carries on. And then they would also present with, so the infection, why do they have infection? It's because the cancer is making the bone marrow to produce less white blood cells. You remember, the white blood cells are the ones that are fighting infection. So if you don't have enough armament for infection, then you will have an infection, another infection, and another infection. So we also see that with over and above the infection, they would also have anemia. You know, the same thing. They become anemic because the bone marrow is now producing less red blood cells, you know, that is going to carry the hemoglobin and the oxygen to the rest of the body. So, but if you're not thinking cancer, you might just take iron supplements and give to the child because you see they are anemic. There will also be bruising, easy bruising. You know, they'll have those bruises on the skin. You touch them, they just bruise. You know, they have those black patches, mm-hmm. and you think maybe they are allergic to something. It's also the same thing. The platelets are not produced properly because of the effect of the cancer on the bone marrow. So they have that bruising. And they will also bleed. Remember, if the bone marrow is not producing platelets and they bruise, then they will bleed from, they might bleed from the nose, they might bleed from the gums, they might just bleed just from bumping something light, mm-hmm. and they bleed. Because even bruises are bleeds under the skin. So those are some of the symptoms that you will see with leukemia.
Okay, and so just before you go on to the next one, or are you still busy talking?
I'm still busy with
leukemia.
With the leukemia.
Okay, all right. I'll ask you the question just now. I'm sure it's a common question, but you can continue. We'll talk about that just now.
And because now their blood is not healthy, you know, that blood system is not healthy, they become tired. When you're anemic, you lose appetite as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so those are some of the things. They will also present with loss of appetite. They are tired. They just don't want to do anything. And they also complain of bone pain. About 23% of children diagnosed with leukemia they will complain of bone pain, which we always say it's growing pains, you know, and it's reluctance to go to school, it's, you know, all of those things. Or you played a lot today, so maybe that's why you're feeling like your bones are sore. Can you see there's a lot of things that can mask the symptoms and the clinical picture that we see on the child, because we're not suspecting that it could be cancer. But that the cancer, as it goes on and on, then we see these kind of things. And then with children, once you start seeing the clinical picture, seeing them bruising, having lots of infections, you might find that this process has been going on for about 12 weeks. Can you see when we say recurrent infections should be reported early? You know, like say, no, I came last week, I came last month for 2 weeks with an infection, but I'm still back, because we're talking about 12 weeks. 12 weeks is something like 3 months.
No, so if you see this thing going on and on, it's not, you know, it comes, you feel a little better, the child feels a little better, and it goes back. So it's recurring, it's happening all the time.
It's happening all the time, and despite being managed, it still carries on. The child might have tonsillitis this week, they get treatment and they look better. Next week, they come with otitis media, you know, ear infection. They get treated, they get better. The other week, they're coming with nosebleeds. You know, all these symptoms that I spoke about. They get nosebleeds, they get cauterized, or they're given ointments, it gets better. But the general health of the child is not okay. They're ill-looking. But you can't put a finger on what is exactly happening to this child.
Mm.
So that is how leukemia can present. Sometimes they can just, you know, because the bone marrow is getting packed with these cancer cells, then there's nowhere where the bone, there's no space for these cells to be accommodated. Then that's where the pain comes from.
Okay. You know, that brings me to these two questions. It's two main symptoms here that you're talking about. Nose bleeding. You see it happening in children very often. You know, it's something very common. For any reason, your children have nosebleeds.
Mm.
And also, children suffering or complaining about pain in the leg.
Mm. Mm.
So, like you say, is this also something that you need to keep an eye on all the time?
Yes, we need to keep an eye on that. Remember, I've just said this can carry on for up to 12 weeks before you actually realize that this is a problem. So if for in a month the child is complaining of, my bones are sore, my leg is paining, you know, it would be just fair or suffice to take this child to a healthcare provider and still mention that you are aware of the childhood, some of the childhood cancer warning signs.
Mm.
Is it possible that this can be excluded from these symptoms that you are seeing on your child? Because unless we capacitate the community, we capacitate the parents and the caregivers, then we won't be able to diagnose as many as we should be diagnosing and save those lives that we should be saving.
Okay. We have a message from a listener that says, it's a Sister Shaista. Assalamu alaikum. My 6-year-old son was diagnosed with a stage 3 Willems tumor in December last year. I had been to 5 doctors before that from June, as I suspected something was wrong. They all dismissed my worries, and one pediatrician even said he had behavioral issues. Shaista again, she says, as you can imagine, I was very disheartened, but Allah knows best. I request for special du'as for him as he is still undergoing chemotherapy. So it was actually a cancer that the child had, and unfortunately, you know, much as we doctors are supposed to be knowing everything, we trust what doctors tell us all the time, It's unfortunately that they didn't pick it up immediately, but a mother's instinct, again, plays a very important role there. So would you like to comment on that, please? Yes. And thank you so much, Sister Shanista, for sending us this little message. But alhamdulillah, you know, inshallah, Allah will make it easy for him and will give him complete shifa. Our du'as are with you.
Thank you so much to Sister for commenting about this. Remember at the beginning we said there is no awareness. Some medical personnel are not even thinking about childhood cancer. There's proof. You know, this lady has been taking her child to different medical practitioners, and none of them were thinking cancer. Hence this idea of ours to make people aware of the symptoms, because we've seen that we talk about childhood cancer warning signs and put them up there and say send Sulian warning signs, seek help early for persistent symptoms. But what are persistent symptoms? So if by that time she had known about a nephroblastoma and the symptoms, she would be assertive, like enough to say, I suspect this is happening to my child. Can we please investigate for it?
So it's important. I think as parents, you have a right to say, please check this out. I've heard about this. I've read about this. Or I know about this, so maybe just check it out. You know, I'd rather you tell me there's nothing wrong with my child than, you know, me finding out later that, you know, there was something wrong with my child. And you could, in other words, you waste so much of time where treatment is concerned. You could have started treating the child, you know, as soon as it was diagnosed.
The thing there is, the mother knows her child better than anybody else.
Yeah.
You understand? You go to a healthcare provider. You know your child. So if you stand by your word and say, this child, there is something wrong with this child. I just don't know what it is, but there is something wrong. Because this particular thing has been bothering this child over and over and over again. So I even think that maybe we should investigate for some of the cancers that can present like this. So, you know, empowering the parents with all these symptoms would help us to save the children.
Okay. So, can we go on to the next, one of the other cancers? And I think we can go on to this one because Wilms tumors or nephroblastoma, that it's called. Please tell us more about that.
Okay. Wilms tumor is a tumor of the kidney. So, it's sometimes called nephroblastoma. This tumor, the symptoms can be very vague. You know, the child can be sickly, the child can have a temperature and generally not feeling well. And you might also find some of those symptoms that we spoke about from the leukemia. You know, but the one thing that is distinct about this tumor, this cancer, it's a tumor that grows on the kidney and it is more towards the back. You know, towards inside, but towards the back. And it is a tumor that is palatable. It can move. You know, when you
press on it, it
can be moved. And it can be hard. So the symptoms that you can see, you might see the child having a swollen abdomen. But the swelling may be one side. You know, askew swelling to the site where the tumor is. And one of the other things that you might see, you might find this child, when he makes a wee, there's blood in the urine. You know, that is another thing that you can see. The symptoms are not specific. Those symptoms that we spoke about with the leukemia, you can still find with Wilms. But this distincting feature here is this swelling on the abdomen and with this hard a mass that you might feel when you bathe in this child, or when the child is standing like that and you see that this child's abdomen is a bit skew. It's swollen, but it's swollen towards the back. Because remember, the kidneys are at the retroperitoneum. This is the peritoneum, but the kidneys are almost at the back of the stomach.
Okay.
So that's why the swelling will be more towards the back.
Will it affect both the kidneys at the same time?
It's rare. It's rare to have bilateral nephroblastomas, but it does happen. Usually it would affect one kidney. And once the child has been given chemotherapy before removal of the kidney and the kidney is removed, they go back to normal life.
Does a kidney have to be removed at some stage, or can it be treated in such a way that the kidney is saved?
You know, it's ideal that the kidney gets removed. Because remember, cancer can regrow. So, and also depending on, it's actually very, very ideal to remove the kidney.
Hence, and you can survive with
one? You can survive with one kidney.
Okay.
You can survive with one kidney.
Okay, so those are some of the symptoms. With regards to the Williams tumor, I think I would rather say that word because the other one is a bit more...
It's more
too difficult for me. Okay. Let's carry on with some of the other ones that you also mentioned, the other cancers that are...
Okay, we also have brain tumors.
Mm-hmm.
The brain tumors...
Just before we go on to that, this is a question that I'd like to know with regards to the tumor that we just spoke about, the one...
The Williams tumor, yes.
You know, at what age would these tumors actually come up, or, you know?
It's usually it can happen from 3 months or birth up to 5 years. It's a tumor that occurs on the under fives. The population that's mostly affected by this one, they are under five, as well as the eye tumor, the retinoblastoma. You find from 1 to 5 years, those children get this kind of tumors.
Okay. We'll talk about that. I hope we have time for that one too, but we will talk about that one a little later. Let's go on to brain tumors.
Okay. The brain tumors...
How common is it in children?
That's the first highest common cancer in children, brain tumor.
Okay.
So, remember, the brain is in the skull. It's within the skull. And the skull is like a box.
Yeah.
So, this box, once the fissures, you remember when the children are still small, they have the fissures, the skull can grow. But when they are at that age where the skull is fixated, it's fixed now, it looks like a box. The tumor occurs on the brain, will put pressure on the brain, and it will affect all the functioning of the brain. You find this child starting to complain about headaches. Complaining about headaches a lot. Or they get up and vomit. You know, early morning vomiting. Before they can eat anything, they're getting up from bed and they vomit.
Mm.
Or you find a child that was already crawling. You know, you see all those neurological signs. The child was crawling or the child was walking properly. All of a sudden, they can't walk anymore. You know, they can't walk because they can't balance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because the brain is being pressed by this tumor. So it's affecting the functioning of the brain. The brain controls all the organs. You can also see a child that was talking, and now they're struggling to find words that they want to say. You know, it's like they kind of like they've forgotten what they want. They know what they want to say, but it's not coming. They can't articulate it. Or they walk with a gait. You know, they're trying to, you know, when like they're drunk. They're walking with a gait and their arms spread out to try and balance. Because they're losing balance from that pressure that is being made on the brain by the tumor. Or the child starts, you know, vomiting and having these persistent headaches, and generally they're sick.
So, yeah, one should not actually take very lightly children complaining of headaches. You need to actually investigate.
Yeah, we need to investigate.
Mm-hmm.
We need to investigate those kind of problems. And sometimes with the brain tumors, you find, they, you know, they want to say something and they you can just see the lips trying to say, the lips are trying to say something, but they can't, you know, and they can't even maybe chew, you know, the muscles are
jaw all, muscles.
Jaw muscles are, because there's bone there. The message coming from the brain to say, chop now, it's not being interpreted, and they can't do anything with their jaws, and they drool a lot. Even bigger children, you find them drooling. So with the smaller children, the younger ones, because their heads are still having space to grow, you can see them having a hydrocephalus, you know, a big head, the head growing bigger and bigger, because the tumor is growing and pressing on the brain. So it's occupying the rest of the space within the skull.
So these are symptoms that need to be taken seriously.
These are symptoms that need to be taken seriously. When the child says, I've got a headache, I feel like I'm carrying something heavy on the head, it needs to be taken into consideration, you know.
So, yeah, so what age group? I mean, little children wouldn't possibly be able to, very small ones wouldn't possibly be able to tell you, I've got a headache. They may just...
they become irritable.
Yeah. So, does these brain tumors in children, and if we talk about children, what age group are we looking at really?
You know, 22% of the children can be affected by brain tumors.
Mm-hmm.
And we see them from as early as a year,
mm-hmm,
up to when they are teenagers. They can have brain tumors. So some of the things they would have is drowsiness. Imagine if the tumor is pressing on your brain and, you know, there's fluid there. So they become drowsy because there's too much on the head. They can't, and they even lose appetite. They are tired. They are irritable. They lose interest in schoolwork. If your brain is not working, you know, it's your brain that will make you analyze things and say, this is exciting or this is boring or this is... So if you've lost that functioning of the brain, you'll even lose interest in schoolwork because nothing makes sense. You become slow in your schoolwork. Some brain tumors disturb hormone production in the body because everything is controlled in the brain, you know. Sometimes you find this person is all of a sudden gaining a lot of weight because the hormone production has been disturbed.
That's amazing. I wouldn't have thought picking up so much of weight could be related to
it. It could be related to...
Especially in children. You do sometimes tend to see children just suddenly picking up a lot of weight and you wonder, where did this come from? So it's maybe even a symptom that one should be, aware of and
yes,
have it seen to.
And when the child says to you, I'm seeing, there's two of you, you know, they have a double vision. Sister Zinat, there's another Sister Zinat next to you. You know, it might sound funny and silly, but they actually are having a double vision, yes.
And it's because, all because of the pressure of that particular tumor
on the optic nerve. Or sometimes they start fitting.
Oh.
It's because of the pressure. So the brain is trying to relieve the pressure by making this child to have convulsions, and those convulsions can have a long-term effect on the child. You know, the tumor can be removed, but the effect of the tumor on the brain, the recovery cannot be really 100%.
Okay.
But though we have had children that have had brain tumors and diagnosed early and had the tumors removed and had chemotherapy, and they're fine, and they, you know, they
can have
a normal life, and they are able to go to school. But some of them, struggle with school, and it becomes such a pathetic problem because the peer groups don't understand that this person has had a brain tumor, so their understanding is not as good as the other friends. And another thing, we don't have a lot of schools that accommodate children with learning difficulties.
That is a
big problem. So if we can diagnose these brain tumors early and get them treated and minimize the extent of the damage that will happen to the brain, at least they will be able to go back to school, and at their pace they would be able to manage their grades.
Okay. So that is another common one, that is the brain tumors.
Mm.
We spoke a little about the eye problems, the retinoblastoma. Can we just quickly go through that one? And of course, if we have time, I don't think we'll be able to do that. But maybe just very briefly, the retinoblastoma, and maybe just a few important symptoms with the lymphomas.
Okay. With the retinoblastoma, normally we see adults with a white spot in the eye. This tumor is yellow in color, but when you see it through the eye, you see a white reflection. So it gives you that cat eye reflection. You know, when you're looking at the cat and you see that white reflection of the cat, so it's called a cat's eye. So to make it simple for people to maybe suspect a retinoblastoma, is that cat eye reflex, you know. So when we examine the eye, we should see red, because remember the torch has got a red light, so you should be able to see that red through the pupil of the eye. But when they have a retinoblastoma, you see a white spot in the eye. Sometimes you might see an eye that is squinting. Sudden squints,
okay,
can be a consequence of a retinoblastoma, or sudden blindness can be a consequence of retinoblastoma. Retinoblastoma can happen bilaterally. We did have a patient that had bilateral retinoblastoma, and unfortunately he had to have bilateral enucleation, you know, both eyes taken out. But he retained all the other functions. He went to a blind school. He can manage himself. He's studying. He's doing everything as normal as every other child without the eyes.
Because it was picked up quickly.
Because it was picked up quickly. And also, you might see the change of color. You know your child.
Mm.
The color of your child's eyes, you know them. But then the change of color of eyes should make us suspicious of a retinoblastoma. We also see unequal pupils. Now, if your child already had equal pupils, and then all of a sudden the pupils are not equal, the other one is much bigger than the other one, so you must suspect a cancer. We can also see swelling in the scalp, because when the tumor spreads,
it goes
to the scalp. So you can also see some swelling of the lymph nodes.
Unfortunately, we've come to the end of another program, and Sister Gloria, but when we come back, inshallah, in our next program, we could perhaps just continue with this and carry on with the next program. But thank you so much for coming in and sharing all those that information with us, and I'm sure our listeners can only benefit from listening to these programs. Also, Jazakallahu Khair to Sister Shaista for sending in that comments that you sin. Allah grant your little one shifa, complete shifa, inshallah. Our du'as are with you, and Allah make it easy for you and your family, inshallah. Thank you so much, Gloria, for coming in.
Thank you so much for the program. We need to just carry on making this awareness programs to save our children.
Inshallah. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Well, listeners, that's it from us. Until next time, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.